I am Harrison Kumi, host of World Music Express. Please join us at Bohemios for the H. Kumi Foundation fundraising event on Friday, September 16th from 7 p.m. till midnight, 708 Telephone Road. Because of your generosity, last year, the foundation was able to build our first clean drinking water system in the village of Samsam in Ghana. This year, we are going back to the village of Seda to build our second clean drinking water system for the children and the families who need clean drinking water so badly. There will be African dances, DJs, and live music, a raffle, and me, Harrison Kumi, as your host. Join us at the...
Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m. And time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, and every week, along with Greg Audell, Warren Holloman, Mary Edgerton, and essential team players Nicole Grady and Alondra Mejia, we celebrate the power of story by shining a spotlight on the storytellers who saturate our community. Week in and week out, common folks with their poignant pathways to memories and trajectories, so moving and so raw that we see and feel and hear their life-defining moments. And there are those tellers who take us on whimsical jaunts with folk tales and fables and the merriment that ignites them all. Each a journey that directs us to a land we all call magic. Then there's the role of the writer, who, as Anais Nin declares, is not to say what we all can say, but what we are unable to. And you know what? This describes my guest storyteller tonight, because Benjamin Rybak can indeed say what others cannot. And his new novel, Sadness, is a testament to the kind of written reflection most can only envy. His writing appears at Arts and Culture Texas, Electric Literature, The Houston Chronicle, Kirkus Reviews, The Literary Hub, Ninth Letter, and The Seattle Review, just to name a few. His fiction has received honorable mention in the Best American Non-Required Reading and the Pushcart Prize Anthology. He has taught fiction at the University of Arizona, where he's also earned his MFA, as well as taught for InPrint and WriteSpace right here in Houston. Ben's also well known as a neighborhood dude because he's the marketing director at Brass's Bookstore, one of the premier bookstores not only in the Houston area, but honest to God, in the country. He's been here before, and I'm really glad that he's back. Ben, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Nice to see you again, Hank.
This is just magnificent, magnificent. You know, Brass's, we were talking before the show, really is kind of a hot spot, and you gave me some interesting little surprises about the fact that people are buying a lot of books,
not necessarily
my students or yours, but, you know, people are buying books, right?
Sure, yeah.
And that's on the
sales
increase.
Are up. Yeah.
And the great thing about Brass's is that it really is a community institution, right? That's what makes it special.
I think that's what any bookstore has to be to survive these days. I mean, you're in a weird spot where you're kind of half retail space and half community hub,
right?
And you're drawing people together, and that's what they're coming to you for instead of buying the books on Amazon.
Right, absolutely. And they're the ones that come in and they talk to you and they want to find out what books are out, or you have just great authors coming there. It really is a magnificent place. Is there any kind of a history behind Brass's? I'm not really sure what I mean by that, but who got it started?
Yeah, I mean, there's a great story behind Brazos. Like any story, it starts with a really great character at its center. It's a guy named Carl Killian, who founded the bookstore back in 1974 and owned and operated it for 32 years, I believe. And then he sold it to a group of friends, and then it went forward from there. But Carl opened it with the idea of serving the literary community and being a real part of Houston writers. And Carl went on to help found, you know, InPrint and be involved with the University of Houston Creative Writing Program and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
Wonderful. Yeah, it really is a great institution. There aren't a whole lot of bookstores around, not of that sort. And folks, you have to go visit it. We're going to give you all the information. If for some God knows reason you never went there, we'll get you all the information a little bit later. But let's get to your book, Sadness. There are a lot of themes that float to the surface in the sometimes clouded lives of your character, characters, one in particular. But, you know, fame, family, film, a disappointment, just to name a few, are some of the themes that really do start to surface. As I told you, I read some of your book, and I really find it magnificent. Not because you're just sitting here. Even if you're wooden, even if it wasn't, I would tell Nicole. Okay, how's that? Right. And you're going to be reading a segment, I know, in a few minutes. But give us a quick synopsis.
I think the book's ultimately about the only thing that I seem to care about, which is it's about failure. It's a book that is about two siblings who have just both turned 30 or on the cusp of 30, and they both feel like they're failures for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. One, Max, feels like he's a failure because the only thing he was ever interested in was film, and he wanted to make movies, and he never got to do it. And the other sibling, Kelly, feels like a failure because she never found anything to be interested in. She spent her whole life searching for something, and she's never found anything. And they're reunited for a few days in Portland, Maine, their hometown, and they go on sort of a journey to find a missing girl and to redeem their lives in one way or another.
And the inspiration, I think, is sort of a story in and of itself. There's all sorts of things that really ignited this novel. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's funny because you think about where a book comes from, and it comes from so many different places, you know, or anything you write. I don't know how much I believe in inspiration, you know. I think I believe in hard work. And there's this notion around inspiration that I think you sort of sit there and you wait for something to come. But actually what I think you need to do as a writer is you need to go out in the world and you need to be active and you need to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And that's the real hard work.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. I do think you have to be really observant. And, and this isn't going to sound very profound, but if you want to write, you also have to read a lot. You have to read a lot.
You take in the world around you in general. I mean, I can say that for this book, you know, I started this book 10 years ago. It's not the draft that exists now, but I started, the seed of it came 10 years ago. And it came from a number of things. One thing was that, you know, I myself was a movie-obsessed teenager because I didn't have any friends, just like the main character in the book. I got a little better, though. He got the worst of it. And also, there was a real case of a girl who went missing in Portland, Maine. And that got in my head, too. You know, you then go back to the book a few years later, and you find, or one finds, that one is interested in new things. Mm-hmm. Arizona was suddenly in the book because I'd spent some time there. Just all of these things that you encounter in your day-to-day life becomes fodder for fiction. And it winds up getting mashed together in ways that surprise you. And perhaps you think about your book and you say, you know, how the hell did all of these things come together? Right. And the way they came together is because you just went out there and you lived your life and you paid attention.
So there's a little bit of an autobiographical topspin of this book. A little bit.
Sure, just as much as there is in anything, I think. You know, you've got one brain through which to filter the world, and it's the brain in your own noggin. So, I mean, everything's gonna go through that filter in some way, and you can't escape yourself, can you?
Yeah, you really can't.
It's painful sometimes, but...
You know what also struck me, and I don't know if this is going to make any sense because I'm not really a great writer. You are. Arizona seems to be an interesting place in which a novel can take place. Mm-hmm. I know that may sound strange, and I'm reminded of Ernest Gaines, who was a visiting professor at our school years ago. Yeah. And he said to me, he said, you know, you write novels on the West Coast, you write novels in places like Arizona, Oregon, and you write plays in New York City.
Yeah.
I didn't know what he meant at that time, but I kind of get it.
Well, you know, I've never set a novel in Arizona. There's a bit of Arizona in this book, but it mostly takes place in Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. I would like to set a book in Arizona eventually. Yeah. But I think that there's a great tradition of a lot of interesting writing happening at the outskirts in these little experimental outposts.
Yeah.
Hell, look at University of Houston, where Donald Barthelme taught for many years and did some of his best work, you know?
Yeah.
That didn't happen in New York. York that happened in a city like Houston, Texas.
Absolutely. Well, we're really excited to hear part of your new novel as soon as I remind our listeners that you are my guest speaker. Ben Rybeck, author and marketing director at Brazos Bookstore, and I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, with Nicole Grady, working the boards on So What's Your Story? Only on corporate-free KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 for our friends in Livingston. Ben, we're looking forward to it. Engage us with some of your story.
Sure. I just want to say quickly, I gave a little bit of a synopsis before, but this is a brief scene about a third of the way through the book where the two siblings are speaking with one another. And Max, who's obsessed with movies, has been retracing this missing girl whose name is Evelyn, retracing her last known whereabouts to try to find her. And he's been a little bit cagey about what his relationship with her was, but in this scene he opens up a bit to his sister, and it goes like this. "See," he says, hands in the air, but not to wave away the smoke from his sister's cigarette. "See, if this were a film, if the scene were just starting, if I were directing it, know what I'd do?" Kelly can't keep up with his changes in mood anymore, so she rolls her eyes and says, "I really don't care." "Godlike," Max continues, oblivious, "the camera would begin overhead, and the spectator would watch the park for a moment, kind of like one watches the wide shots closely in films by John Ford or Sergio Leone or Michael Haneke. The spectator would watch, trying to figure out where his eyes should fall until there, see? Someone has entered the frame. And with that, the camera would begin its descent, craning downward. You would float into the dream of the film." "Marvelous," Kelly says. "I left my Oscar at home. Otherwise, it'd be yours." Max laughs. "Who'd want an Oscar? None of the best directors ever won. You want to know what happened the last time I saw Evelyn?" The way he packages these thoughts together, Kelly almost doesn't notice his shift. Instead, she watches one hippie across the park cough as he passes his joint to another hippie. But then Max's words hit her and she looks at him. "Yeah, what happened?" "It was 5 years ago," Max says. "December." By calling into a radio contest and answering correctly its trivia question, the question, by the way, was, in which Hitchcock film has a killer recently fled the police in Portland, Maine? Max won a ticket to a screening of Land Without Water at the Portland Museum of Art. So that night, he crowded into the small screening room and he watched the Portland set film for a second time, feeling his attention slip like smooth, wet glass from his fingertips. "Did you just think of that?" Kelly asks. "Or have you been rehearsing this story?" After the screening, Max tells her, he climbed over some long-legged people in his row. He was the one destined to become the next great Portland filmmaker, and his work should have been on that screen instead of Land Without Water. "I wasn't bitter about it, though," he says. "I just knew it, like one knows a fact." Outside, he saw young people lighting cigarettes, flicking collars skyward for shelter from the breeze. But with no collar to pop, and no cigarette to light, and no companion with whom to speak, he's embellishing now, Kelly knows. Max started off home, going around the side of the museum to head south down High Street, looking upon the Portland Harbor spread out before him, seeing all the lights and streets snaking together into ramshackle circuitry lit up and electric. "Please," Kelly thinks, "you really must get to the goddamn point." As he hiked down High Street, Max heard something up ahead and saw two silhouettes standing at the back museum entrance, a bulky man and a slim woman. He planned to pass without eye contact, but then the woman spoke. And what did she say? "Please, please." It was Evelyn. The back of Max's throat went dry, and he quickened his pace. "No entry this way. You need to go to the front and show your ticket." "I don't have a ticket," she said. "I already told you." "Then no entry, period." Max's feet felt like feathers as he glided on the ground, sighing her name, "Evelyn, Evelyn." She and the man looked at Max, who sighed, "It's me, I'm here." Closer, Max saw Evelyn clearly. Moisture glistened on her red splotched cheeks, and she sniffed something back, something so thick it sounded clogged in her throat. Max came to a stop. Evelyn stared at him and opened her mouth, startled. Her shoulders quaked, and it seemed like she was seeing how long she could hold her breath. Then she looked Max in the eye and shook her head, and a fresh drip rolled down her cheek. She turned from both men and hurried across High Street, neglecting to check for oncoming traffic, then dove into a parking lot. The light held her for a moment, but Evelyn hustled into darkness, and Max lost her. This was not the response I desired, Max tells Kelly. Obviously, Kelly says. So Max called Evelyn's name, then, quote, across the street I flew, he tells Kelly. I ran into the darkened lot, but I'd completely and utterly lost her. This didn't stop me, though. I ran, shouting into the darkness, shouting into trees, into bushes, shouting at houses lit dimly as though by candlelight. I shouted her name and ran around my city until I was lost and confused in Portland for the first time. But still, I called to her, Evelyn, Evelyn. He stops, takes a breath. So that was that. Jesus, Kelly shakes her head. Max narrows his eyes. That's what happened. Forget it, Kelly says. I was just thinking I might get a little honesty here, you know, something real. But I should have known it would just be another performance, just another one of your phony stories.
Fabulous. Why that scene? Why did you choose that scene?
Well, I figure here we are on a program about storytelling, and it's a scene in the book where someone tells someone a story.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And yeah. it's also like me as a storyteller telling the story of Max, who wants to be a storyteller in film and imagines his life like film, and then imagines himself almost in a movie telling another story. And so it's like three levels of storytelling.
Magnificent. It really is. Ben, let me ask you something. Whether you're writing or telling a story, how would you describe your signature style? What kind of a teller are you?
That's a really difficult question. I think that...
It's an advanced show,
yeah. Anytime that you decide what kind of teller you are, you're dead in the water a little bit, you know? I think you're ultimately listening to the characters.
Right.
And right. If you're concerned first and foremost with the way that you're telling the story and not the people that you're telling the story about, then I think you run into problems pretty quickly.
Yeah. I think you have a really quick-paced style, and I think you have a style that's immediately engaging. I really love your style. It's a very quick-paced style, and I realize that doesn't sound very profound. It's not really descriptive, but to me it is, and I love that pace. You know, when I think about Portland, Maine, I'm thinking about a place where you walk down the sidewalk, you take a look at leaves, you see color, you can breathe, you think, you're writing in your journal, you're getting a cup of coffee, nobody's around you. Is that the kind of place I'm thinking of, or is that just too romantic?
It's romantic, so I'll puncture that by adding the smell of the fish everywhere that just waft up from the wharf.
Oh, that's kind of spoiled it all, but yeah, that's okay. Yeah,
but
okay.
I miss it. That's all right. I hadn't been there in 3.5 years, and then I went back there after this book came out, because I grew up there. I went back there to do a couple events around Maine, and I really miss that smell.
I know this is a really hard question, but I'm curious. I'm sure you have a lot of memories about Portland. If you can think of one that would really give us an impression to understand what kind of an indelible impression it's made on you growing up, what would that be? What's that one image about Portland, Maine that you want to share with us?
Oh, boy, but then I'd spoil the book, because I think that the book is whole thing.
Yeah, we got to buy the book. We have to buy the book.
I'll say this really quickly, that I was a movie fanatic when I was growing up, and there was a great video store called Videoport, and there was a great movie theater called The Movies on Exchange, and those were two very special places to me. I can remember the smell of them perfectly. And in the course, and they both play very prominently in this book. Mm-hmm. And in the course of the years it took me to write the book, both of those places closed. Yeah. So Portland has become, or the Portland in my book is not so much an accurate Portland; it's a Portland of the memory.
Yeah.
And because of those closures, I think that the book. I don't know if a lot of your listeners in Houston, Texas care about this, but maybe there's some Portland people around. But the book has become elegiac in a way that I didn't originally intend it to be.
Right. You talk about the Portland in your memory and the Portland that's real or the port. But isn't that the same thing? Or else you're asked to choose between two things when you only see one. Your memory is real, isn't it? I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, I think memory is more important than reality. In terms of writing, anyway, I could never write about Portland until I left it. Because when you live in a place, when you live in a place, I think you become so concerned with accuracy that you want to make sure that you like describe the gum that's in this particular part of the sidewalk, in this particular block or whatever, when like no reader is going to care about that.
That's a good insight. And I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
And so if you leave a place, then the stuff that bubbles up, because you can't go and check to see what graffiti is new or what gum is on the sidewalk. So what bubbles up to the surface and building that place for your reader is the really important stuff that's potent to you, you know, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah, it does. There are a lot of messages in your novel, and I know it's very hard to choose one, but if there's one message that you want us to walk away with based on the scene that you read or based on the synopsis that you conveyed, what would that be? What's the message?
It sounds cheesy or disingenuous because my book is called The Sadness, but I would like people I think there's great catharsis in sadness, and I think that it's okay to be sad.
Yeah.
And it's okay to work through it's okay to feel like a failure sometimes. And just remember, you know, you work through it and you come out the other end. And I think that's ultimately what this book is about.
Yeah, I feel that way all the time. Nicole, so do you, don't you? Do you feel like a failure?
Nicole,
I want you to help our listeners grasp the full appreciation for our sponsor, the Best Darn Storytellers Group around. Tell us about them.
Well, by the best, you can only mean the Houston Storytellers Guild.
I do.
Yes, yes. And they are starting this month on Tuesday, September 26th. And it's the fourth Tuesday of every month. Now, the Guild will hold their monthly swaps at the Haven Center at 1805 West Alabama, right here in Montrose. So check out their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org and follow us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page to learn about all of our guests and about the dynamic storytelling community in Houston. And don't forget to like us on your way out, guys.
Thank you, Nicole.
You know, Houston, are welcome.
Houston truly is a rich community of storytelling enthusiasts. The Moth, another terrific venue held at Warehouse Live on the second Tuesday of the month, is not to be believed. And you know what? You might as well keep every Tuesday evening open for storytelling, night every night, and every Thursday night for your So What's Your Story ritual. Because if you haven't joined us before, this really does become a habit. Because this stuff is always contagious and always live, and only on Pacifica KPFT 90.1 Houston. Next week, Greg Audell will host Sylvia Jason with her moving narrative about the Chilean Revolution. Sylvia's son Jeremy was on the program a few weeks ago and really wowed us with his incredible knowledge of myths. And you don't want to miss Sylvia, because she's a pretty remarkable woman herself, and her story, I promise, will transform you. Ben, you know, as we said earlier, Brazos is really a unique literary venue with incredible events of its own. Tell us about the upcoming calendar. Can you do that?
Yeah. Just a couple things. We're doing two ticketed events in this fall. The first, September 18th, with a great classicist, Mary Beard, a wonderful scholar of the ancient world. And then in November, we've just started selling tickets for an event with poet Sharon Olds, who's a real hero of mine, and I think just a wonderful, wonderful writer. And I'm excited to have her come into Houston.
Now, don't you have some kind of a film group coming out, or a movie club, or something like that? Or
we did a bunch of programs this past summer with Rice Cinema and Museum of Fine Arts Houston and Alamo Drafthouse and the Houston Film Critics Society. We called it Summer of Kubrick. We did a bunch of book clubs. And then we screened around the city the films that Kubrick made based on those books, and it was a really fun time.
Yeah, now both of us love movies, and when I speak the word film, what comes to mind? Just go for a couple of minutes. What comes to mind?
Comfort.
What else?
That's my favorite.
That's one word.
My favorite thing about film is how comfortable it feels when you fall into the filmmaker's rhythm. It feels like you've just sort of been there forever in their brain, and they can control you in a way that even the best writers can't control you, I think, because they can give you sounds too, and they can, you know, they can move the camera. Every time that I try to write any piece of fiction, I always feel, no matter how well I've done, I'm always deficient in some way against film, because in film you just have so many tools. It's so wonderful.
Right.
But you know, I love everything about going to the movies. It doesn't even matter what the movie is. When I I don't get as much as I used to, but when I used to really be obsessed with film, I would just go see everything. And it didn't matter to me what it was.
Yeah.
And that's the comfort of it. Because
there's something pretty wonderful about it. There is.
Yeah.
If you had to come up with the top 2-3 favorite movies of all time.
Rules of the Game by Jean Renoir.
Okay, good.
There Will Be Blood by Paul Thomas Anderson. The Fugitive with Harrison Ford.
No kidding.
I'll tell you what, you know, I like to, you know, everyone wants to feel like their taste is very esoteric and you want to impress people with your answers to these questions.
I'm the only one in town who probably knows that dialogue better than you. Newman, what are you doing? Thinking. What are you thinking about? Well, think me up one of those chocolate donuts with some sprinkles
on
top.
It, so long as you're thinking,
right? Yeah.
Hey, I'll watch that movie anytime it's on TV. Put that movie on TV, and I'm not leaving the house for the next 2 hours.
Right. The Fugitive is Dr. Richard Kimball. I love it. I know. Great. I love that. All right. Who was the storyteller in your home growing up?
Oh, probably my dad. My dad is a police detective in Portland, Maine. So he would have a lot of great stories. He shows up in my book too. I just threw my dad's name in the book because I thought it'd be funny. I threw a lot of old friends' names in the book because I thought it would be funny. And
what
then
was it like growing up with a police detective?
Oh, you know, it's every story that he would ever tell. It seemed like the punchline was way less interesting than the setup because he would always start telling you the story about like being at, you know, like a crime scene, and then the story would actually be about, you know, them screwing up a sandwich order at his favorite restaurant or whatever.
And it's like,
that's not the interesting part of the story. Go back to the crime.
Wow,
that
but of course, has
he,
to be,
he couldn't yeah. talk about a lot of it, but but you know, he has some good stories, as you would imagine.
Yeah. Your dad's still with us? You're still pretty close to him?
Yeah.
He's still working as a police detective in
Portland, Maine.
How many police detectives do they have in Portland, Maine?
Oh, man, I don't know anymore.
Like
they've maybe got...
Or, no,
no they, got a, they got a few. They got maybe 10, something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. Well,
he'll yell at me.
Digits, yeah.
He'll yell at me tomorrow because I got the number wrong.
I'm going to get an angry phone call now.
Who's
listening to you tonight? Anybody of any significance listening tonight? Anybody you want to say hello to?
I'll say hello. I think my dogs are listening at home.
Okay.
So that's all that matters. Greg's out there.
I'll say hello to them. Dogs rule.
I'll say hey to Greg and I'll say hey to my buddy Jen at home.
Beautiful. Ben, you know, I think that John Updike was speaking about authors like yourself when he claimed that we're past the age of heroes and hero kings. Most of our lives are basically mundane and dull, and it's up to the writer to find ways to make it interesting. This 28 minutes really ran by, and I wanted to thank you so much, Benjamin Rydick, for your ability to navigate through the confounding nature of life with the skills and insights of a true wordsmith. You really are a great guy and a great writer, genuinely. All the Best with Sadness by Benjamin Rydick. Tell us where you can get it.
Brazos Bookstore.
All right. Gee whiz. Yeah. All right. Bissonnette, right? The address is?
2421 Bissonnette.
Beautiful. 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 Scooter is up next with The Inner Side. To complete the back side of the Power Hour on KPFT, I want you to make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. We'd be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, along with the fabulous team on So What's Your Story? And we are asking you, for God's sakes, to always remember that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
KPFT invites you to Electro Love Fest, Saturday, September 24th, from noon to 1 a.m. Performers include Tres X, Gravel Tooth, Nameless Horses, Heartburn, A Live One, and more. The event happens at the Last Concert Cafe, 1403 Nance Street, near downtown Houston. It's a benefit for your community radio station. Tickets and more details are at kpft.org. See you there. This is KPFT Houston.
Oh,